Welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. I am your host, Paulette Rico, and I'm here to guide you through the storm of divorce into much calmer waters. So hold tight. Whether you're contemplating divorce, in the thick of it, or just rebuilding post-divorce, I've got you covered. Each episode, we'll tackle the tough topics, share resilient stories, and offer practical, helpful advice to help you navigate with confidence wisely. Remember, you're not alone. I've been there, and so have millions of others. And your brighter future awaits, I promise. Ready to turn a tough time into a time of growth? I know you are. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you find this content helpful, please share it with others who might benefit. Now, let's dive into today's topic. See you soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Better Divorce Podcast. Paulette Rigo here. Some of you may not know who I am, but I'm the CEO and founder of Better Divorce Academy and author of the book Better Divorce Blueprints, and yes, the host of the Better Divorce Podcast. Today, we're going to jump in with a friend of mine who's also an attorney turned mediator. Her name is Lisa Koski. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Paulette. I'm very excited to be here.
Me too. I wanted to bring you in for this conversation because you've seen it all. You've been in the trenches, both as an attorney in family law cases, really understanding the ins and outs of the litigated process, but also behind the scenes, right? Working with couples and mediation and,
yes,
and that nuance, shall we say, of that's a different, chemistry. So you have created what you call the seven divorce dilemmas, and I want to jump right into that. There are many dilemmas when it comes to yes. divorce. I mean, maybe hundreds, who knows? But I'm sure that the fact that you got it down to seven is brilliant. So let's just jump right in. Everybody who wants to know everything about you, it's all in the show notes. But we're going to talk a little bit more about how you can learn more about finding her, but let's just jump into that conversation. So where do we even start? How many dilemmas we see?
Yeah, like you said, there's so many. And I went back through all the podcasts that I've ever done. And I got all my expert opinions because they've taught me how to be a better mediator as well. And thought through the hundreds of clients that I've worked with and what they go through during divorce. And so what I did is I like to talk about the seven divorce dilemmas. It's kind of like the YouTube shorts. So, you can take a glance at it. And I think especially for people who are maybe in the beginning stages or just thinking about divorce, to be aware, these are things that are going to pop up. And then if you're in the heat of it, no, you're not alone. And there are other people going through these. So I have them written down and I don't have them in an order of importance because, I'll kind of talk about that as we go. But the first dilemma is the finances. And, I think about women often because I am a woman and I understand being in a relationship where my husband was the one who kind of took care of all the finances. And so now that's changed, but in general, there is one person that kind of takes care of the finances in a marriage and another person who doesn't. And it's not always necessarily the wife. But that is a really scary thing when my clients come to me. And it's actually sometimes shocking. They'll come in for their consultation. So I meet with both parties. And a lot of them don't have a budget. They have no idea where their assets are. And so I always tell them, for starters, start seeing what you have. Start writing down what your assets are. Pay attention to what's coming in the mail, the emails that you're getting. Get it all together so that you have an idea. Because when you have clarity, it just kind of brings you a little bit of relief. And I want to reduce the suffering that people have. So that's probably the first thing. And another thing I always have my clients do is a budget. because you can't know what you need or what you're spending unless you have that. And it's, again, shocking. A lot of people don't have it because it feels painful. But in reality, it doesn't have to be. It just shows you what you need. And then you can begin the process better educated and a little bit more relieved. So I love it when people know their finances. And I have learned, I've had a weird relationship with finances. I think I was afraid of them. But I have learned that I am a woman becoming and learning how to be better with my finances and understand them. And I can believe that. And that just brings me a little bit of peace. So that's what I want for everyone.
And we take with us what we learned as a kid. Like if you were, you know, 5 years old or 10 years old and you see mom with the checkbook and she's paying the bills.
Yep.
She's, I wouldn't necessarily even say the breadwinner or it's 50-50 or
right.
The stay-at-home parent. You still learn that. Or if dad was the one that had the checkbook, and back in the days when I was growing up, people had checkbooks, but, you know, and that was what you saw, that dad was the one that was, you know, writing the checks out and more in control of that situation. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that's the norm that you think is what you should do. And depending on what your spouse learned as a kid, right. What did they see as a habit? You know, was their mom or dad, which one was in charge of taking care of the expenses, paying the bills, investing money or not investing money, or who liked to spend the money and who went shopping more than the other? You know, we all come with this, I hate to call baggage, but history of who did what. And when I got married, of course, I was young. I was fresh out of college, was part-time job, wasn't making a ton of money, but, you know, I felt like I was contributing. I would buy the groceries or decorate, but everything was pretty much a mystery. And I wasn't really involved in the tax preparation, investments, the business of the husbands. I kind of liked it that way. You know, it was just, I could, you know, buy towels and sheets and make dinner and, you know, just enjoy being a newlywed and all that. And then all of a sudden, we sold that house and bought another house and started having children. And, you know, the bills went from this high to this high. And, you know, things got complicated and the tax returns, which were this high, were now this high. And I started to be like, what's going on here? And of course, what was going on was, it's none of your business. So 20 years later, I thought, uh-oh, this is a problem. So, you know, Lisa's right. You know, it is a dilemma, and don't be in the dark. But if you're mediating or hoping to mediate, and you're willing to fill out the domestic relations for the financial affidavit, or let's be honest, you can't because you don't know anything other than your name and your address and the date of birth. You know, and you're like, well, I think I have a checking account with $5 in it. And your spouse is like, oh, yeah, I'll have to do that later because that's a lot. And I don't even have that with me. And I'm going to have to, you know, check my files, and they're procrastinating about it. Then maybe mediation is going to be a little trickier.
Yeah. In fact, it's interesting that you're saying that, because how I have it set up, that doesn't happen. I don't schedule the first mediation until I have all their financial, I have all their information, and I do it a week after, because you have to have that or you don't know where to start.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, but if let's say you have a couple that comes to you and they want to mediate, and it's a phone call or an email, and you do like a, I don't know how you do your consults, but if you meet with both of them, you're not mediating yet. It's just a consult. And you, of course, you know, introduce yourself, and you're getting to know them, their goals and what they hope to accomplish. And one person seems to be totally in the dark about the finances and the other's either avoiding it. How do you proceed with that?
By educating, right? First of all, by making them aware that you need to understand. And then you also have to address, Paulette, there are times if there is a person hiding the finances, mediation is not going to work. And so then I have contacts. Now, when people use divorce coaches like yourself, they're so much better prepared and they know where to find someone who can dig in to the finances. And sometimes that's necessary. It's not necessary in most of my current cases because I just have the most amazing clients who want to work together. So la-la, that's been a beautiful thing that's happened to me, but it isn't that way for everyone. So I don't want to say, you know, sometimes you need to fight things out in court. Sometimes you need someone, an attorney. Always get that divorce coach to help you pull it all together. And I know you've talked about that
a lot. Yeah, it's just ideal if both parties mm-hmm. are communicating and transparent and willing to mm-hmm. share financial, not only assets, but debt and the whole picture. But unfortunately, if one of them's like, I don't want to talk about it. And it's hard. I think as a professional, as a mediator myself too, although I would say the majority of the work I do coaching would be that preliminary work with putting all the paperwork in order if they come to me early, is asking, because a lot of time I would say like, are you well informed, or are you in the dark about all of your, you know, assets and liabilities? And usually they kind of give you a little puzzling look, like, I don't know, or I don't have the login and password, or there's no mail comes to the house. I never see statements. Everything's online. It's all in a cloud. I'm not allowed to, you know, that's when mm-hmm. I immediately go, okay, this could be tricky. So
yeah, it could be. And then a lot of times the other partner will step in and say, we need to sit down and I need to show you this. I mean, that happens too. And that's beautiful. And what I want to say about the finances is I want people to view this as an opportunity. This is your opportunity to grow and learn. And it might be a little bit uncomfortable, but guess what? When you are on the other side, you get to make the decisions on what you're going to spend your money on, what you're going to save. And it's just going to help you to grow and flourish. And I always think that brings me joy.
And having the confidence to have that conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, let's go on to number two.
Okay. So number two, and I will say number two, if you have children, is the top issue, and that's co-parenting and your children. And I just have to jump in and say, I have a free masterclass on co-parenting. So listeners, go there. It'll be in the show notes. It is such a scary thing. A lot of my clients are terrified and really driven to do the mediation and work together because of those children. I mean, and so that's wonderful. They both love their children. And so I help them with tools to co-parent better, to kind of set up a business relationship, because as you know, you are going to be connected for the rest of your life, because there's graduations and weddings and grandbabies. So, you know, if you can have this relationship working well, it's just going to benefit you, but it also has been shown to benefit the children. Yes. And so a big part of what I do is a parenting plan. And I actually have a parenting plan course that is very reasonable that anyone in any state can take, you know, and so you will have the plan together that you need for your children. And a lot of times that's probably the first step you want to do. You want to know what's happening so you can tell your children, you know, we've got you, we love you, and this is how the schedule is going to be, and we're both going to be in your lives. So I think too, helping parents to feel a little bit of relief that sometimes children actually learn more and become more resilient if people divorce well. They're learning things that children who don't deal with divorced parents don't ever have an opportunity. So I really try to reassure parents that you can do this a better way. But then, Paulette, we know there are situations where you've just got the worst co-parent in the world. And I can't say that every one of them is going to be able to co-parent together. And then we have some strategies on kind of how to parallel parent or stay in your lane. And then I can reassure that parent that what we've found is that if children have one parent in their life who's healthy and functioning well, and they can watch you deal with a difficult parent, the difficult co-parent, they can learn a lot and do well too. So I'm all about let's relieve the stress that we're having. But there's so much. There's people are so terrified about not seeing their children every day, you know, and it's a reality.
It's a transition too.
Yes.
I do believe the co-parenting issue and the fear or the level of anxiety or apprehension has a bit to do with the age of the children. It, mm-hmm. you know, as and all empty nesting parents have anxiety. I know some parents that start fearing college when they're freshmen. You know, relax, enjoy each stage. Yes. You know, and when you bring the baby home from the hospital, you know, you think that stage is going to last forever. What is that expression? This too shall pass. So,
yes.
You know, when they're teething, you're like, ah, and when then, you know, they, will they ever be potty trained? Ah, please. I'm so sick of diapers, you know, and then the car seats and the point is every age of children has its sticky point, right? But when you're divorcing and you've got teenagers, it's, they're even in a perfect marriage, and I don't know that there is such a thing, it's hard to raise teenagers together, mm-hmm. right? But now mm-hmm. you have two separate households with parenting, co-parenting, and as Lisa mentioned, parallel parenting, and dare I say, counter-parenting, if it's a real, you know,
yeah.
your business, I'm not talking to you. And it can be really hard to raise teenagers, even in a parenting situation. So you now throw in that hormonal enraged feeling. But when it comes down to it, kids just need to know they're safe.
Yep.
That mom and dad
loved.
That they're yep. safe. And it just boils down to that. Are you safe? Are, you know, and they feel like, okay, well, this isn't great. This isn't what I wanted, but I'm going to be okay. Mom loves me. Dad loves me. Maybe the rules at mom's are going to be a little bit different than the rules at dad's, but I'm adaptable. And I agree with you that divorce can teach them alternative dispute resolution yeah. and conflict negotiation, things that some kids don't ever learn. Other than a fist fight right. in the backyard or parking lot at school, which is not the alternative dispute resolution I was going for. It does teach children and teenagers that not everything in life is fair and not everything in life is perfect, but you can survive and make things better based on how willing you are to get along with other people.
Yep. Yeah. Amen. And I just want to add, and this is interesting, and this is for any child. If you're in a marriage forever and you've got these teenagers, it took me years to realize, you talked about how they just need to feel safe. My thing in my mind was they just need to feel loved. They need, and I didn't figure it out. We adopted our baby by far. I didn't figure it out. So I apologize to my older children. I was so concerned about making sure they did everything right and that everything was set for them. And then I realized they didn't need that. They needed me to love them, and they're going to learn it on their own anyway. They're really not going to listen to me.
And kids do not come with an instruction manual.
No.
Wouldn't it? I mean, you can buy every baby book, every pregnancy book, every, you name it, parenting book, and it's not going to necessarily apply to your kid because of their DNA and demeanor, right. personality and, yeah. and situation. So read all the books you want and watch all the YouTube videos you want, but kids do not come with directions. You yep. have to just love them unconditionally. Let them know yes. that no matter what, you're always there for them. And mom and dad may love you differently, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. And yeah. And I think what we just talked about is very hopeful. It's very hopeful for parents. And that's, again, let's suffer less through this.
Yeah, let's suffer less.
Yeah. The next dilemma is a big one that you can't miss. And we've kind of, it's interlaced in all of these. It's the emotions. Mm-hmm. And so, believe it or not, I am also a life coach. I don't do a lot of coaching, but it has taught me so much. And I use what I've learned on my clients. You know, I want to ask them, how are you feeling? And sometimes they're like, wait, you're an attorney. What are we doing? I'm like, yeah, this is a different, we're designing our own divorce. Mm-hmm. And I want them to suffer less through it. So we look at there's so many emotions. And Paulette, I know you're so well versed in this, and that it's something that you help a lot of people with. But I think probably the number one thing that I learned, and I learned this myself, is to just sit with it. I think I was always so afraid of my anxiety or, you know, another feeling that I deemed bad that I tried to push it away and stuff it down. And then, you know, how they always pop out somewhere else. And I learned, and it was so interesting because when I first started this journey, I was in my 50s. So it took me a while. But when I first started to look at my anxiety and some of those feelings, I realized that when I sat with it, maybe I even named it. I thought about, where is this in my body? What color is it? I just really focused on it. Sometimes it dissipated. Sometimes it went away. Sometimes the anxiety would go away just by me not being afraid. So I think one amazing thing that I learned is don't be afraid to feel how you feel, because it's not going to destroy you. It's the only way to heal through it.
Yeah. In my book, in chapter one, lesson two, it's called Feel Your Feelings. That's why they're called feelings, because you feel them. It's nice to name them, you know? I mean, anxiety, fear, rejection, abandonment, anger, sadness. Keep going. Yes, exactly.
I have a little feelings chart, and it's actually on my website, too.
I love it. I mean, whether it's a divorce or anything, and feelings are good, feelings are bad. Feelings just aren't typically neutral, right?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're also, the beautiful thing about feelings is they change.
Yes.
We're never in the same state of emotion forever. We can't be sad always, and we can't be happy always.
Right.
It can't always be day, and it can't always be night. Can't always be right or left. You know, it's in my world, yin and yang, you know, expansion and contraction. And that's what makes life interesting. So you have to sit around, you know, the joke I had growing up in New England was, if you don't like the weather, just wait a while, it will change. You know, it does. So I'm not so much in Atlanta, but and never. It doesn't change much. It's either hot or very hot. But your emotions are going to change. And some people can handle change well. They love change. They see it as excitement and opportunity, you know, dwelling in the possibility, Eleanor Roosevelt. But other people are going, no, I don't like change. Change is bad. And those are the people that have a harder time dealing with divorce, because it's hard to deal with change. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. But emotions are so key. Name it, feel it, own it. I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yep. And I love how you talked about, we're not meant to be joyful 100% of the time. And I think I spent a lot of my life kind of judging myself, like, why am I not happy? I have everything I want, you know? And it's like, okay, wait a minute. And I also have learned to have empathy. Of course, you don't judge your feeling. Of course you feel that way. There's reasons why you do. So that's just another part of it. And here's another thing. It's an opportunity for you. If you're going through something hard like divorce, this is an opportunity for you to really understand how to deal with your feelings and have a better life after it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little acronym I love, HALT, H-A-L-T. It stands for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And you can just sort of say, am I hungry? Because if you are, chances are actually you're thirsty. So drink first. And if you are, go eat something. You know, don't be grumpy and, you know, people that are hangry. Yep. Are you hungry? Especially teenagers. Oh, they get awful when they're hungry.
Oh, they do. They do.
And children. That's why they cry. Angry. Are they angry? Like, are you pissed off about something? Like, what's upsetting you? And if you're, you know, keep going. Are you lonely? Call a friend, write a letter, go for, you know, do something, be social. Or the opposite of lonely. Maybe you just have a little too much stimulus in your life and you need to go shut the door and be alone. That's okay. Yeah. Maybe too many people. And are you tired? Go take a nap. Go to bed earlier. You know, and if you can check those four boxes, then let's address the other emotions, because then it's a deeper psychological thing. Yeah.
And it's a way to take care of yourself. Love yourself enough to do that, to do what you just, you know, said with that halt method. I wrote it down.
Just halt, take a second,
yep,
and figure it out. What's going on?
Yep. I love that.
All right. What's
I'm going to use that.
Excited.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said. I think the time difference.
I'm excited. What's next?
Oh, you're cute. Okay. So what's next is judgment and stigma. And I don't know if that's as bad as it used to be. I feel like maybe there's less of that. And I think that what I've heard, you know, how the gray divorce is so common now. And one of the reasons they think that might be is because the stigma has gone away. So some of these women who are my age or older, who wouldn't have gotten divorced because they didn't think it was acceptable way back when, are now realizing, well, maybe I can. So I think that is getting better, but I tie in with this. I have some really, you know, I talk about how great my clients are. They're amazing. And a lot of them will come to me and say, we don't know how to tell our parents. Like, they have great relationships with their in-laws.
Right.
But they're really like, we don't want to be judged by this, and we want them to know. So we kind of come up, we do a lot of interesting things in this divorce mediation. We come up with how do they want to tell their parents? And a lot of times they'll craft an email together to their family members and just say, we want you to know this has nothing to do with our relationship with you. So there's just lots of those different things that maybe you don't really think about.
Yeah.
You know, when you're starting to think about divorce.
And family can have a lot to do with the stigma, or I like to use the word expectations of what marriage should be like. Because when you're young or younger, depending on how old you were and you got married, but when you're young, you don't want to disappoint people. Right. When we're little kids, we want mommy and daddy to love us, approve of us, think we're wonderful. You know, we do no wrong, and then we do something wrong and they yell us. We go, well, that wasn't what I wanted. So when you get married, all of a sudden, not only do you want your spouse's approval and admiration and support, and vice versa, hopefully, but now you've got these in-laws on both sides and you don't want to let them down. There's all these expectations and all these, you know, unwritten rules about holidays and thank you notes and entertaining and the way you speak and how you act and what you do. And all of a sudden, you know, whether you're married 5 years or 50, you now have a large circle of additional people in your life, right? Besides just the spouse and your children. You've got cousins, aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, uncles on both sides. And then you get to know them and they get to know them. And before you know it, you're like, oh, we can't get divorced because what will the family think?
Right.
There's a lot to consider.
Exactly. And I think there's also issues when you have friendships with other couples to deal with. So you can handle that the same way and approach them together. And it's cute. So Kate Anthony is, I think, a friend of both of ours. She's darling. But she always says, when you're going to get divorced, call your mother-in-law. She has a great relationship with her mother-in-law. Now, that's not always true for everyone. And that was probably...
Mine had already passed away. So,
Yeah.
It was, in fact, I think her death was one of the reasons, and I'm not blaming her death. Her death was one of the reasons the family and the marriage changed. She was kind of the glue that kept the family together.
Yeah.
There's always that one person in a family that kind of makes everybody mind their P's and Q's and stay in line. And kind of is the glue, right? And when she passed, naturally, the first year or two, everybody was like, everybody kind of started going their own way and celebrating holidays a little bit differently. And, you know, everybody was getting older, meaning the kids, and it just changed. So I didn't have to call her.
All right.
I know, but she's still in my heart. So,
yeah. Anyway. And I mean, it's true for anyone. If there's a sister-in-law, if there's a friend that you're, you know,
I miss
just
that.
Call them and let them know. Yep.
Yeah. It is hard. Sometimes you're divorcing the family and not the spouse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's something to think through.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay, the next thing that I want to talk about, which is really important to me, is the legal aspects
divorce. You mean there's a legal aspect?
It's kind of big. It's kind of important. And yeah. Interestingly enough, that's another thing. I have so many clients who will come in for a consultation and they won't have any information on the law, you know, and I just say, start listening to some podcasts, get a divorce coach, start studying what are the laws. It's not that hard. And I love that I'm a lawyer and I understand all the laws, but I want to let you know, Paulette, my mentor was not a lawyer and he was amazing. He studied the law. He understood it. So it doesn't mean that you have to have a mediator that is an attorney, but you need to have a mediator that understands the laws in your state. Now, I actually have, just because I can't reach everyone in the state of Minnesota, because that's where I do the divorce work. I have an online DIY divorce paperwork course where I actually try to give you everything I give you when I'm sitting in front of you. So you get those little life lessons, you get tricks on how to communicate, how to prepare, but you also get all the paperwork you need and all the legal information, because you know, we can't give any legal advice.
But exactly. I mean, yeah. It's different to be familiar with the laws versus giving it a counsel at law.
And I think for so many of my clients, just having that legal information, just understanding how it works. And when we're in the throes of it and we're trying to figure out who's going to pay what for maintenance or alimony, whatever you want to call it, I can say, well, this is how the law works. If you had an attorney, this would be your argument. And if you had one, this would be yours. Now you could fight it out and spend, you know, your kid's savings, or we can try to come to something here that's reasonable.
Or risk it and let the judge decide.
Yeah, that's risky.
I know. We can't decide. I think I'll do better with the judge decides. And I also like to think of it as not just the legal aspect, because that in many people's minds are the laws. Right. And they're different.
Right.
But there's this judicial aspect in addition to the legal, which, think of it this way. The judicial aspect of divorce is more the procedures. You know, there's this step by step procedural manner, decorum, demeanor of the court, the formality of the divorce. Right. Which is more judicial. And I'm not saying versus, I mean, even just security and the bailiff and the security and which room you go to and which form to fill out. It has nothing to do with the law. We're not talking law here, but there's this judicial formality, which is scary to many people. And the beautiful part about mediation is you can pretty much avoid most of that, right? Mm-hmm. Most of it. Not, I can't promise you all, but we can kind of say, okay, well, that's nice. And I'm glad that formal judicial experience exists. But if we do this, then we can just kind of sidebar that a little humor. But the legal part would be more of like the laws in your state, right? And how they apply to you and your spouse. It's a scary, unfamiliar world to most people. Even what to wear, what to say, to say it. What, you know, don't bring crinkly water bottles and chew gum and, you know, what, you don't show up in your tie-dye jammies, you know,
maybe they do now, but I hope not.
Not serve you. But I have to say, like, I don't know how you feel about it, if you would agree or not, but that part can be very intimidating for most people.
Paulette, I'm so thankful that you brought that up, because you're making me better. I love that. So I am going to talk about that when I talk about these dilemmas. I am going to add that to the legal piece, because that is, my clients contact me and that's why they want me overall. They want me to hold their hand through the process so they can understand it. And that's why they go to my DIY course instead of going to the government paperwork, because there's no one really telling them how this is all going to work and come together.
Right.
Such an important piece. And thank you.
No, you're my honor, honey. And there's a difference between being an attorney and a litigator. Maybe that's just my perception. I could be wrong. But I know some wonderful attorneys that are not so great litigators or cross-examiners. Is that a true cross-examinators? I don't know. You tell me which one.
It doesn't matter.
But, that are on their feet, right? They think mm-hmm. on their feet and they're quick and they have, you know, relentless memories and they're great at, you know, they're like private investigators about the way they craft a question. And I love mm-hmm. talking. I'm like, maybe I should be, you know, that's how I think. And like, they're almost like little FBI agents of a case, you know, they're like deciphering and discerning and reasoning the case. Whereas others are, my goodness, can they draft a motion or nine and they can keep the paperwork coming with the 55 footnotes and endnotes and all the research they do. And they craft these beautiful case studies and man, but you put them up in front of a judge and they're like, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So you got to match the right attorney to your case. So some of them, you might need that litigator that's up and that can really advocate for you and knows your case and knows the law about your particular case. And others, you just need some really pretty paperwork.
Yep. Which is where a really great divorce coach would come in handy for trying to find that perfect fit. Yeah. Yeah. Of an attorney.
And there are those cases. I have a couple where, you know, they drag on for, I'm going to say eternity, although that would be an exaggeration. It feels that way. And the guy have to go to a case to the courtroom with the client next Monday. And I'm not the lawyer. I'm the divorce coach. I'm not the mediator in this case. I'm his BFF. I hold his hand, lock arms with him. I'm there. Mm-hmm. Him during his case. And it just meant, but we talk the day before what he's going to wear, what he's going to say, making sure that his attorney has all of the necessary paperwork, evidence for that hearing to make sure that he just doesn't walk in there and go, wait, I didn't know I needed to provide that. The attorneys don't take the time, some do, but to really prepare them for success when they have to show up for court. It could be a modification. It could be a contempt charge. It could be a regular normal hearing or a pretrial, whatever. It could be a modification of child support or, you know, you name it. I've seen it, been there, done that. And my experience is in the courtroom too as a coach because of my own personal and professional experience. And that can be so scary. As soon as the client says, they flip out and they go, I have to go to court on, and they get so nervous and rightfully so. I remember opening that email and I would be so terrified when it would say that I had to show up at court A in room whatever at such and such a time. I'd be like, why? What did I do? Oh no, who killed someone? What do you mean I have to go to court? And as soon as you read that, there's a defendant and a plaintiff, you know, it's just terrifying for most people. So that's why we love mediation, don't we, Lisa?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, yes. We love mediation for that reason. And a great divorce coach, if you do have to go through that,
sure,
can hold your hand. And it's not, you're not going to be paying the legal fees. I think, too, people are sometimes afraid to send a note to their attorney. What can I expect? Because, boom, they get, you know, hit with another fee. So,
yeah, and I also help them learn to be a more credible client for their
And
help them to be a conduit. And I know the attorneys quite well too. And actually I give a lot of business to attorneys when So there's this family of like, and they're like, thank God you're here. You would have shown up in jeans and a t-shirt.
You know, well, and I do. Yep. And I always say that my clients who have a divorce coach who come to me are always, they spend less time on the process because they know what they're doing.
Yeah. They feel more confident too and prepared. So.
Yep. Yep. So important.
Yeah, that whole legal, it's a whole jungle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is. But you can give yourself a elementary education on it and feel better, suffer less.
Yeah. You don't need to go to law degree, but it's a responsibility you have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Agree. Okay. So the next dilemma might be one of the top ones right now. Housing, huge issue. Yeah. And I've attached, I sent you an ebook that's free for your listeners. And it talks about preparing for a mediation, but it also includes Tammy Wallensack, who helps people when they're trying to decide if they're going to keep their home or let their home go. And I'm telling you, it is something that you need to think about these days when you're going through divorce, because so often you are not going to even find a place to rent that maybe is as low as what your mortgage payment is. That's one side of the coin, because those interest rates are lower. So people are not wanting to let go of their homes. However, sometimes one spouse can assume the mortgage and sometimes they can't. Mm-hmm. And that's where you need help. And so if you go to that ebook of mine, you can find Tammy, and she's a free resource for you to understand if you can assume the mortgage. You need to know that before you start negotiating. And I think what I love, I've learned so much from Tammy, but she went through her divorce and she fought to keep her home because she thought, this is the best thing for my kids. They need to stay in their home. And as she stayed there and paid the high bills and was trying to get her kids into the same activities that they've always been used to, she was so stressed out. And, you know, remember that oxygen mask thing? If you are not taking care of yourself, your kids are not going to be okay. So she was so stressed out trying to work so much just to keep the house for her kids. It wasn't worth it. So she learned the hard way that it would have been a better option to just, but she sold the house. She downsized. She made it exciting. You know, the kids got a new room to decorate. And then their lives didn't change that much because she was able to afford and she was in a better place, enabling her to be a better mom. Mm.
Housing is a hot spot. I'm, you know, whether the spouse A is attached to the sheetrock and memories and the Christmas tree and, well, we brought the baby home from the hospital in this house and, you know, this is where our first this and our first that and our first this, or the wife is, you know, it, or they both are, oh my, that can be a butting of the head. So appraisals, fair market value, understanding the sensitivity of showing houses with little kids in it, not putting away their toys and having to have the house be spotless, but yet having it be staged in sellable condition, right? Mm-hmm. I work with certified divorce real estate experts and certified divorce lending professionals myself. And because, you know, with clients all over the country, you know, they're more location driven, you know, real estate people know their area and are only allowed to work in a certain area because of their licensing. And so with the mortgage professionals. So it is interesting, appraisals, insurance, real estate, sales, commissions, it's also rate and term and not a refinance. Understanding the nuances of how a mortgage can play into whether it also be sold with both parties agreeing to that, or if it's court ordered that it be sold.
Right.
If court ordered to be sold at a later date after children graduate from a certain period of schooling, or if spouse A can afford the mortgage and buy out the equity of the other, or vice versa. There are a lot of things to consider, and the mortgage is a big piece of it. You know, rates are always going to be up and down and up and down. And the rental market is, as you said, Lisa, you know, it used to be that, oh, I'll go get an apartment. You know, who could, I remember where I, when I moved out, it was called Alimony Alley. That was like the big apartment complex where all the single women and men were moving to because it was new and clean and affordable. And it was the big joke, like, oh, he's living in Alimony Alley. Oh, she just moved to Alimony Alley, right? I know, isn't it? I thought it was pretty funny too. So got to find the humor.
It kind of sounds like a healthy community though. you're in it with a lot of people who have gone through what you're going through.
Everybody's
so.
Like, oh, join the club. You'll be fine. Go to the back of the list, you know. It is traumatic. And also if one has been a stay-at-home parent and they have no credit history, no work history, and they're like, I want the house. I'm like, well, unless it's got no mortgage and you're going to get a boatload of money to pay for all the bills and you're going to be independently wealthy with the trust fund and I don't know, some sort of never-ending pool of funds, how is that going to happen, right?
Right. And I want to say, like, sometimes we can make that happen.
True. You
know, a stay-at-home mom does keep the house. We set it up so she gets maintenance for a certain amount of time. Yeah. She gets a plan in place. I ask her, what's your plan? How are you going to earn money? And then they start thinking about it. And sometimes they start going to school or getting into a career when the kids are older. So it can work.
Yes.
You just need people around you supporting you, who can help you be creative and design this yourself.
Yeah, you know, it's alimony's for a period of time and a certain amount. Yeah. And child support is for a period of time and a certain amount. And that may be enough money. It may not be enough money. And it also has to be 6 months of steady and stable income.
Right.
And you have alimony and child support for at least 3 years to have it be, so I always like to lie and say 4 years, because put a little buffer in there, because if you have 48 months instead of 36, you know, you're going to be a lot more eligible than if you just like, if it's 24 months, I'll be like, well, that's too bad. Right.
Right.
So important. Yeah.
Right.
Have a CDLP on your team if you can. So great.
Yeah.
And yes, awesome. There's more.
There's one more, and you talked about it in HALT, but I don't think you can talk about divorce dilemmas if we don't talk about loneliness.
Mm.
And, you know, sad. I mean, people, this is, and we've kind of touched on it. I mean, but it, one thing, like in the parenting aspect, parents have such a hard time thinking about not seeing their children every day.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting in your home and, you know, you're alone, there are tools, right? Now, I'm not a therapist and I'm not a physician. And I want to say, if you are really down, you need, you know, and you need support, please, please go find that, because this doesn't work for everyone. And I understand that. I have people in my life who struggle and they need the extra help. But some things that you can do, I mean, of course, we all know, eat right, get your sleep, exercise. We can all say though, but that is important. Like, do keep remembering to do that, because it is shown that it does help with depression. If you get outside, if you walk, if you move your body. I remember someone told me that 30 minutes of walking is equal to taking an antidepressant. Again, not for someone who has severe issues with mental illness, but for us, you know, going through a hard time,
right,
it could be helpful. But there are things, and I've had podcasts where we've talked about this, things you can do. And we kind of, you know, came to the conclusion that just reaching out to people, and like you said, are you lonely? Call a friend. Well, that's true. Even text a friend, yeah, even message a friend. It's something. And then to take it even a step further is to, this is what I try to do. So if I'm feeling a little bit lonely, and I'm an introvert, I'm a quiet person. So if I go to a big function of my husband's and it's like, you're wearing your gowns or whatever, you know, and I am not comfy, and I walk in, and what I've tried to start doing now that I'm an old grandma and have learned so much, right? I stop like thinking about me, and I look around the room and I go, who looks like they could use a little friend right now? Mm-hmm. And so I take it off of me and I think, I reach out and I start talking to that person, thinking about trying, you know, helping them. Mm-hmm. So with loneliness too, if you can do some volunteer work, if you can go help, if you miss your kids, go help children in a hospital. There's lots of things you can do. My daughter is a medical doctor and they always need help with those kids with cancer to play with them or their siblings, or, you know, those families are going through a lot. If you can do something like that, that's huge. And that just can bring you so much joy. Mm-hmm. Or even if you're out grocery shopping, and you smile and connect with the checkout person, which now I order my groceries online, so I'm missing that a little bit.
Right.
We're all getting so, oh. Yeah. But even that little connection can help you with your loneliness.
Mm. One thing I did was, my children were 11, 13, and 15. So they're, you know, they had friends and school and sports, and they were back and forth. We didn't really have a parenting plan, because then my daughter turned 16 and she had a car and we couldn't really tell where she was, because, well, she was 16. And then the 14-year-old and then the 12-year-old. And it was a little bit crazy, you know, we're like, mm-hmm. school, and we were only 8 miles apart from each other. So that also made it easy.
Very nice.
I just said to myself, what is it that I miss doing as a human that I would be doing when my kids go to college? Like what, which wasn't that far.
That was
actually
really thoughtful. So I started
to, went back to, I studied a ton. I ended up getting my 200 hour, my 300 hour, my 500 hour yoga teacher training certification. I wrote a curriculum and started my own registered yoga school. I started to train yoga practitioners to become teachers and open studios. I got certified as a birth doula. I got certified as a lactation consultant. I studied macrobiotic cooking. I became a chef. I became an Ayurvedic consultant. Like I was a, I just got out there and I learned and read and taught and just found a life that I would have loved to have done, but I was teaching ballet. Like, what am I doing in ballet? I don't want to teach ballet. I did all the things I wished I did at 20. And got married at 22. And then of course had kid after kid after kid. And well, that's a whole nother, you know, day at the races when you've got a house full of kids and sports equipment. Yeah. So, you know what, and don't do what I did. Like, what are the things that get you juicy and excited that you said to yourself when you were pregnant or busy or, you know, like, oh, I wish I could fill in the blank. Well, what was that? I wish I could, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to learn? What do you, you know, and it doesn't mean you have to go back and get your MBA. Maybe you do. I don't know. Do you want to be an entrepreneur? Do you want to write a book? Do you want to, I don't know, what do you, you know, become a personal trainer, learn a Spanish? I don't know what you want to do. But, you know, get back into that.
Yep. I love what you're saying, because one thing that I kind of forgot to mention is it takes a little bit of action. It takes you maybe being uncomfortable. Maybe you're going to reach out. It takes a little planning. Well, I always wanted to do yoga. Well, now I can when I don't have the kids. So I'm going to go. So you have to.
And they're in school all day from 8 to 3.
Yes.
Right.
Push the kid, you know, push. But I want to tell you too, when you, I love that you did that for yourself, because that's hard for some people. And even me, you know, you talked about how it's hard when kids go off to college. Ooh. That was hard for me. Like, what do I like to do? I don't even know what I like to do. I love my kids. I love their activities.
Right.
But
they're not going to stay home just to make you happy.
No, and I don't, and you don't want them to.
You've got a basement full of kids that just play video games. I mean, that's a problem.
No, you want them to go to college. You want them, you know, like I knew that in my head. You want them to have a life, but you kind of, it was just hard for me because I was a mama. But just recently, I had a really interesting conversation with a financial person in divorce, and she told me, here's one way to really understand what you value and what you enjoy. And she was talking it from a financial point, but it holds true with this as well. She said, say you walk into your financial planner and he says, you're good, you're done, you don't have to work anymore, you've got everything you need. What would your day look like? Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I thought, well, I really love doing mediations. I love my podcast, Doing Divorce Different. I love being on podcasts because I love little conversations with people. I thought, well, I might still do that. And I'd probably still do some mediations. And then I thought, I would work out like it was my job. I love moving my body. I love working out. It's always been a part of my life, but I've always pushed it down. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize that's the only thing that I would do different. Real, in reality, a lot of your life would be the same.
Right.
But that's how you can kind of key into, that's what I would do different.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to start, I'm a tennis player, so I kind of am like fighting the pickleball scene, but I'm going to jump in because that's what my friends are doing.
If you can't do them, join them. Yeah, I mean,
right.
I taught performing arts for 20 years. Not that it was my career choice. It happened. I loved it. I learned a lot. And then when I stopped doing that, I kind of just didn't work out. And then I got obsessed with it and did spinning and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff until my knees started screaming at me. But that was one of the reasons that I moved to Belize, is I opened a aerial yoga teacher training studio and spa, and I hated cold weather. And I thought, okay, this is the time in my life. If I'm given the opportunity to manage a spa and own my own studio in the Caribbean, what am I, crazy to say no? then I'd really need the psychologist. So it wasn't forever. I was a chapter. I knew it would be a chapter. And, you know, now I'm back in Atlanta. But the point of this conversation, as Lisa and I are telling you, find what it is that makes you excited. And if that's traveling, if that's a new career, if that's, like she said, making a career out of, well, dare I say, pickleball, you know, whatever that makes you, even if it's just for a month, nothing has to be forever. But you do need a transitional tool to get you from stuck to unstuck. So you're not sitting on the couch crying that your kids are, you know, with their dad or at college or with their significant other. You know, ours now are 26 to 34 and we're grandchildren. We have two and one on the way. And again, you know, they all have significant others and wonderful jobs and they're all thriving and nothing feels better as a parent to say, oh, they're all doing great. It would be much sadder if Steve and I had a basement full of five kids with, you know, years and they were all broke. So, and it isn't about money. It's really about fulfillment, but you got to find ways to deal with your own emotions and make not your sadness, their sadness. Don't make them feel bad for going off to college and having their own lives of success.
Right.
You know, you can give them a hug and say, I miss you. And then go, I'm so proud of you. Go get it. You know, but it's hard. And divorce is a change. If there's ever a word for change, it's divorce. Everything in your life will be different. So I hope these dilemmas have been helpful. They are the realities of life and divorce, but yeah, try to see them as opportunities for growth and things that you want to better and simplify and help make you more in tune with the person that you're going to be and not the person that you were. You're going to change because of your divorce. Yeah, I mean, your DNA is the same. I get it. You're not going to wake up and have different color eyes and, you know, be a foot taller or shorter, but you are who you are. But you have the opportunity and the license now to live a different life and it's beautiful. You got it. Yeah. Well, how can people find you and work with you? What's the best way for them to do that?
I think the best way is just to go to lisakoski.com and it's Lisa with an E. That's the only thing. And my podcast, Doing Divorce Different. Today, you're on it, Paulette. The episode came out with Paulette on it, but it's a great. Yes. Yeah. We talk all things divorce. You can find me on any platform. But if you go to my website, you'll find all those links. So I think that's probably the easiest.
Right. And again, it's lesakoski.com. So thank you, Lisa. You are intelligent and witty and charming. And I'm proud to call you a friend. So thanks again. And until next time, you are so, so welcome. Until next time, everybody, I will see you on the next episode. Talk soon. There you go. It's stopping.
Okay. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. And it was a little longer than normal, but I think it was. Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small, action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, keep thriving in the chaos.